Hello, respected viewers, check out the new t-shirt. But anyway, this video is about House of Lords reform, because Sir Keir Starmer's Labour administration has just announced they're finally going ahead with stage two of Lords reform, a quarter of a century after stage one. And indeed, I went to watch the penultimate day of the sitting of the hereditary peers in the upper chamber. So the House of Lords got roughly 900 members. It's not a fixed number, 89 of whom are hereditary peers. And there are roughly 800 hereditary peers. And so the hereditary peers, the 800 from amongst themselves, elect those 89. And having been elected, this person serves until his or rarely her death. I think they can resign, though. And there's a vacancy. And yes, the son inherits the title, but doesn't automatically get that seat in the House of Lords. The 800 peers will elect another one of themselves to fill that vacancy, which is very seldom the son of the deceased. And so it goes on. He's part of a compromise between the Labour government and Viscount Cranborne, the Conservative leader of the House of Lords, way back in 99, because the House of Lords can delay bills by up to 12 months. So the only way to override the Lords veto is to pass something thrice within 12 months, in which case it becomes law anyway, but after a delay of 12 months. So, you know, Parliament only sits for roughly 180 days a year. And because there's limited parliamentary time, governments are seldom willing to waste that many days to ram it through. And it just wasn't a high enough priority to get rid of all the hereditary peers and move on to stage two Lords reform. But with the United Kingdom facing many urgent problems, economic problems, difficulties with public services and rising crime and prisons full to bursting and stuff like that, and wanting to move faster with green energy, etc., with the armed forces severely depleted, it is staggering that Labour should consider this sufficiently important to devote so much parliamentary time to it. Begs the question, what stage two House Lords reform will be? So the government's press release said that the hereditary peers were indefensible in this day and age. Well, I mean, I don't agree. Obviously, humanity was hereditary, and there's accident of birth, so random selection, there's an element of random selection to fill various posts under even Athenian democracy. So whether you have these certain talents or not, or born into a rich or poor family, that is accident of birth as well. It's really to try and take chance out of life, and there's always a certain randomness. But remember, all they could do is a revising second chambers and say, delay by 12 months at most. Beyond the 89, there are various people who had the title that was always going to go father to son, a seat in the House of Lords, such as the Duke of Norfolk, who's the Earl Marshal, was the Marquess of Cholmondeley, and I think another one. So, and the Social Administration felt there'll be a compulsory retirement age of 80 and so on. But what should they do for stage two? It's often, you know, a home for superannuated politicians, and those who don't turn up for an entirely parliamentary term are deemed to resign. For example, Lord Prescott, John Prescott, the former Labour Deputy Prime Minister, he didn't show up throughout the entirety of the last Parliament. Therefore, he's lost his place in the House of Lords. He still has his title, Lord, for the remainder of his life, but he's said to be very indisposed, and it's improbable that he shall live to the end of the current parliamentary term. He's a man of the most formidable proportions in terms of his immense girth. Anyway, there are very few who are willing to defend the place of hereditary peers there, but is it not an oblique attack on monarchy? So the big question, should they be elected or not, the people in the House of Lords? Because at the moment they're already appointed, there's a House of Lords Appointments Commission, but remember, that's solely advisory. The Prime Minister can override it, as indeed Boris Johnson did to appoint Lord Yevgeny Lebedev of Siberia. And often they're given of, and they can choose that place which is important to them. And it's almost unheard of to have a place outside the United Kingdom. And if they won a battle abroad, like Earl Montgomery of Alamein, it's like that. Port-au-Prince is a crime. Thus is bring back all hereditary peers and get rid of live peers. Yeah, live peers were introduced in 1958, the same time that women were allowed to take their place in the House of Lords. It was very rare for a woman to inherit a hereditary title. And when they did, they still weren't allowed in the House of Lords, but 1958, that changed. So a live peer, he is a baron, known as Lord, she's baroness, known as baroness, and they hold these titles until they die. They don't pass them on to their children, nor any right to sit in the upper chamber. And very distinguished people, scientists, like professors of engineering, the cabinet secretary, who was head of the civil service, the chief of defense staff is in the highest office in the armed forces. These people tend to get it. Judges used to get it. I mean, judges are still called Lord and Lady at a certain level, but they're not in the House of Lords anymore, haven't been since 2009. So should they be elected or not? Because the trouble is, if you elect them, you might just be creating a replica of the House of Commons. And what's the point in having a copy of that? Yet more full-time politicians. The thing they need to sort out is the payment, because they're paid about £300 a day for every day they show up. And tend to be very affluent people with very distinguished careers behind them by the time they get into the House of Lords. But some of them, they're doing political work in the United Kingdom or overseas, but because they didn't show up to the House of Lords, they get nothing for that day. But if they go for 1 minute, they get £300. If they stay for 12 hours, they still got £300. I mean, I propose they'll be paid like minimum wage for it, if anything, just the honor of it. So you don't do it for the money, you do it because you actually want to advance an agenda. So I thought we could elect things, but not on a geographical basis, on a generational basis, as in take people from age 18 up to 100 or whatever. What fraction of voters are between 18 and 29, for example? Let's say it's 20%, and 20% of the votes would be for them. We may be elected for a single non-renewable 10-year term, and that'd be a fixed term. If it's the middle of a parliamentary term for the House of Commons, nevertheless, the election would take place. We could do it completely by postal ballot to make it cheaper, to make it easier. The trouble is, they're probably quite low turnout, quite boring. And how many seats would there be? I think there's something to be said to have a panel of experts, or experts on, you know, medicine or chemistry or physics or whatever it is. Those should be there, and still some very distinguished politicians who can give their advice. And one of the advantages of it is the candor with which they speak, and they're beholden unto none. They've often had their careers. They're not going to be promoted again. They seldom are appointed to the cabinet. And so no prime minister has been there since Lord Salisbury stood aside in 1902. And of course, George V laid down that constitutional doctrine that the prime minister would always come from the House of Commons. Prior to that, they'd usually been from the House of Peers. You look at William Pitt the Elder in the 18th century, the great commoner, because he was almost unique in being a prime minister in the House of Commons. Some experts, but I think the House of Lords Appointment Commission should have the ability to veto people. But there was maybe one Conservative, one Labour, one Liberal Democrat representative. Did the Lib Dem speak? Was vacant for ages. My worry about vetoing people is then they would veto dissenters, anybody who spoke up for an unfashionable cause. And the House of Lords should be precisely there to vocalize opinions which otherwise wouldn't get a hearing in the House of Commons, because it's impolitic to say certain things, to speak up for human rights, to speak up for a child's right to life, to speak up for fair trials and freedom of expression in itself. Because you're just not going to be elected. If you do that, political parties won't touch you with a 10-foot barge pole. But I think, say, if we had three people in the House of Lords Appointment Commission, maybe all three had to veto you to block you, something like that. So a mixture between those. We could still represent the religious denominations. At the moment, the Church of England is the only one that has ex officio members. The 26 longest serving bishops in the Church of England are automatically members of the House of Lords. When they retire from their bishoprics, they're no longer in the House of Lords. The Archbishop of Canterbury and the Archbishop of York are their ex officio, even though they're not the longest serving. Sometimes they appoint the chief rabbi to the House of Peers. That's not automatic, or a very senior Muslim representative, or Lord Soper, who was president of the Methodist Union, but they don't automatically get it. So we could change that and say someone who's general secretary of the Church of Scotland, although that's only held for 1 year. Someone for them, someone for the Archbishop of Armagh, for example, to represent the Catholic Church in Northern Ireland. Actually, he's the head of it throughout Ireland, Prime Minister of all Ireland. And what else can we do? So some of the free churches, the Archbishop of St. Andrews, whoever the highest Catholic clergyman is in North Britain, and so on, could automatically be there. The Archbishop of Westminster, the Archbishop of Middlesbrough, to represent Roman Catholics, and the head of whatever Sunni and Shia organization there is, someone who the Hindus and the Sikhs and so forth, maybe the National Secular Society, isn't it, the British Humanist Association. People who represent trade unions and so forth, different segments of society. Anyway, that's my proposal. What do you think? Thank you for watching the video. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal. Good night.
So, how do you